We come together in worship with these words from the Unitarian poet E. Cummings. I thank you, God, for most this amazing day, for the leaping greenly spirits of trees and a blue true dream of sky, and for everything which is natural, which is infinite, which is yes. I who have died am alive again today. And this is the sun's birthday. This is the birthday of life and of love and wings and of the gay, great, happening, illimitably earth. How should tasting, touching, hearing, seeing, breathing any lifted from the know of all nothing, human, merely being, doubt unimaginable you? Now the ears of my ears awake, and now the eyes of my eyes are open.
A reading from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 24, verses 1 through 12, the resurrection of Jesus. But on the first day of the week, they came to the tomb taking the spices that they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they went in, they did not find the body. While they were perplexed about this, suddenly two men in dazzling clothes stood beside them. The women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, but he has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still in Galilee that the Son of Man must be handed over to sinners and be crucified, and on the third day rise again." Then they remembered his words, and returning from the tomb, they told all this to the 11 disciples and to all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them who told this to the disciples. But these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. But Peter got up and ran to the tomb, stooping and looking in. He saw the linen cloths by themselves. Then he went home, amazed at what had happened. And another reading from The Growing Edge by Howard Thurman. In the Christian faith, wisdom places the central moment of high celebration to coincide with the coming of spring, the creative season when life abounds on every hand. After the crucifixion, one of the disciples said, "Well, I'm going fishing." The event outside the city wall seemed to have exhausted the possibility of life and of God, to have made of him who died on the cross its prisoner. Later, these disciples had another kind of experience that completely changed their feelings. Whether or not the biblical description of what happened commends itself to the modern mind is not basic to the experience. The disciples now felt that he who died on the cross was no longer the prisoner of the event of the cross. That is all. I suggest that theirs was an example of universally valid insight. There is inherent in the nature of life what I call the growing edge. We see it in nature. Always vitality seems to be nestled within the heart of a dying plant. A kind of oak tree comes to mind. You have seen it. The leaves turn yellow and die, but they stay on the tree all winter. The wind, the storm, the sleet, the snow, nothing is able to dislodge those leaves from the apparently dead branches. The business of the tree during the long winter is to hold on to these dead leaves. Then there begins to be a stirring deep within the heart of the tree. The expression of life reverses itself, and the function is no longer that of holding on to dead leaves. It turns them loose. They fall off. In their places, buds begin to come. What wind, storm, hail, sleet, and ice could not do during the long winter, now come to pass very quietly because of the vitality inherent in the tree. No expression of life exhausts life. At the time when the slaves in America were without any excuse for hope, and they could see nothing before them but the long, interminable cotton rows and the fierce sun and the lash of the overseer, what did they do? They declared that God was not through. They said, "We cannot be prisoners of this event. We must not scale back our hopes and our dreams and our yearnings to the level of the events of our lives." So they lived through the tragic moment until at last they came out the other side, saluting the fulfillment of their hopes and their faith, which had never been imprisoned by the event itself. And in private life, the same things obtain, so long as you recognize that no event of your life, whatever its character, can imprison you. You will not scale down your aspirations to the level of the facts of the present situation. You will let what rides on the horizon inform the event with which you are wrestling, until at last the event itself begins to open up, to yield, to break down, to disintegrate, under the relentless pressure of some force which transcends the even and tutors and informs it. This is what the resurrection is all about.
Well, this year the daffodils didn't quite make it for Easter. Easter's earlier on the calendar this year, and with the return of some cold weather last week, their progress slowed down a bit. And after having planted another 500 in front of the church last year in memory of the loved ones that have gone before, those that are listed on the yellow sheet that's in your order of service, I was really hoping that we would not only have them with their heads sticking up out of the cold ground as they are now, but have also blossomed into a field of bright yellow in front of our church for Easter Sunday morning. Each year, I start checking to see if they've poked their heads up through the ground as soon as the snow and freezing cold goes away. And then I check their progress almost every day, waiting with anticipation for their bright yellow blossoms. There are some budded ones out there. So they're almost there. I think maybe another week or so before we start seeing the first of those incredible yellow flowers. Maybe it seems kind of silly, but those courageous daffodils provide me with a message that I need to hear again and again. It's the message that I believe is also at the heart of the biblical story of Easter. It's about a belief that is truly central to our survival. For me, those blossoming daffodils trumpet out the message of Easter, that from seemingly dead places, new life can return. Even in the cold ground, or in the cold or broken heart, or in an oppressed people, or in those places where violence or terrorism or natural disaster has struck, there is resilience, there is hope, and there is the possibility of new life. For me, those yellow flowers just preach a great Easter sermon. But seeing they're not ready to do it just yet, I guess you'll have to deal with the one I'm going to preach instead. Well, let's start. That the Christian Gospels give several different accounts of the Easter story. These accounts don't all agree on the facts of that first Easter morning, just as I suspect we do not all agree on what we think did or did not take place. For me, whether Jesus physically overcame death and walked out of the grave is not as central to the Easter message as is what happened in the hearts of his followers. With the crucifixion of Jesus, the possibility that all Jesus taught died with him on the cross and was buried with him in the tomb. That was at least what his followers perceived initially. It was the death of all they believed in. But then, really soon after, something happened in them, in the followers, and somehow, as Thurman put it, for them, the one who died on the cross was no longer the prisoner of the cross. They found new life in a dead place. Here, I think, is found the deeper and more universal truth of Easter. It doesn't deal with a factual question of what happened at a tomb 2,000 years ago. It's not written in some ancient text. But as Max Kutz references in the quote at the top of your order of service today, it's written in each of us today, and it has the power to transform our lives. Some believe in celebrating Easter we should focus on what happens to us after we die. Well, you don't have to wait until after you die to reap the benefits of an Easter. I think the Easter message is something we need to put into action in our lives right now. The sermon reminded us in that second reading that Eileen shared, we don't have to stay trapped in dead places. We don't have to lower our sights to the circumstances of our situation of the moment. There is more waiting for us on the horizon. Easter reminds us that there is a power available in us, to us, even in the darkest of times, that in fact can move us to a new place. It reminds us that we can move beyond the brokenness of our life to wholeness, beyond the sadness to joy. The hymn we just sang calls that truth the unfailing promise of the ages that always, always something sings. Although there are certainly times when we can't hear that singing voice too well, still it is there, singing within us. You know, there are so many things that can kill our spirits and have a death-like hold on us. At times, we give up and resign ourselves to a death-like existence. The message of Easter, the promise of the ages, is that it doesn't have to be that way. We can find within us something different. We can claim something in our lives, and in doing so, change sadness to joy, despair to hope, hate to love, self-loathing to self-acceptance. Easter reminds us again and again that it is possible to find new life in dead places. Each year as Easter approaches, I start reading over the biblical Easter accounts and think about which one I'd choose for our service and maybe on what aspect or passage of it I might preach. And I was pretty much all set to go with the Gospel of Mark this year, probably the one that fits most easily in the Unitarian Universalist context because it ends with a question mark about what happens. But the news that came of the Belgian bombing and the interviews with the Belgian people that were on television seemed to calling me to one line that's in that Easter Gospel of Luke that Eileen read for you. You remember the angels speak to the women who've come to the tomb to prepare the body of Jesus. They pose questions to the women. Why are you here? Why are you looking for the living among the dead? They actually do it in kind of an arrogant manner, implying, you know, ladies, you should know better. I've always thought that the angels were rather hard on the women. And far be it for me to be critical of angels, but these women were not looking for the living among the dead. Wrong question, angels. They had come to be with the dead. They were looking to anoint the dead body of Jesus and to mourn him. Just as Thurman in the second reading described it, the male followers who had abandoned Jesus before his death, these women too, who had stayed loyal to the end, had given up all hope. They were simply there to perform their duty to the dead. It was over, and they were trying to put a respectable ending on it. You know, this week, once again, we've seen something like this at the site of a terrorist attack. People wrote messages, brought flowers, and mourned at the sight of that, mourned the horrible loss. But still, in that question, why look for the living among the dead? Still, that question leaps out at me. It challenges me, and it simply reminds me of something that is really so, so central in our lives. There is something within us that tells us not to give up, even when death and despair are all around us. Now, in a very literal way, rescue workers and people who themselves were badly injured were moving through rubble, hardly able to breathe or see in the clouds of dust, feeling their way to help find and save the living among the dead at the Brussels airport and the Brussels subway. The possibility of life was still there. You know, watching that made me think about other photos, not only of other terrorist attacks, but of natural disasters, where incredible hope kept people looking for the living among the dead, even days and days after an event. It's in our DNA. On this very practical level, we don't give up if there's a faintest possibility of finding life. But there's much more. As the days passed, and I listened to interviews with Belgian people, even many of those who were touched directly by the tragedy, who were there, one after the other, they said something like this: "We cannot be held hostage by the terrorist's attack, or this event does not have the power to trap us in a dark place." After the Paris bombing a while back, government closed down schools and told people to stay in their home for days, but this time the Belgian government did not. As soon as it was safe, they encouraged people to go on with their lives and not allow the terrorists to hold them in a place of fear. You know, today there was scheduled a solidarity march for hope against fear. Unfortunately, it had to be canceled because of the ongoing investigation, but the people who scheduled it are determined to have it soon. You know, there was death. There was defeat. But if you buy into the narrative of fear and defeat, you are defeated yourself. One courageous person after another, they said they were not willing this time to live as prisoners of the terrorists. I hope on this Easter day, the Easter message of hope continues to fill their lives, everyone's life, who was touched by the horrible experience of terrorism. And at the same time, those good people from Syria and from other places who are now fleeing horrible regimes of death to Europe to find new life, I hope that message is there for them too. And you know, what people have experienced in times of terrorist attack, persecution, natural disaster, certainly in less dramatic ways, we also experience in our personal life, at a personal level. There are those times when there are sort of terrorist attacks or earthquakes in our personal lives. Times when one of the many death-like experiences that can happen to us has its grip on us. Times when, as Thurman describes it, we become prisoners of the difficult events in our life. He goes on to say we don't have to scale down our hopes and dreams to the level of these events. No event in your life whatever its character, can imprison you. The miracle of Easter is that we have the power here to claim new life, no matter what death-like experience has its grip on us. We answer that question, why do we look for the living among the dead, with an incredible affirmation of faith. We look for the living among the dead because we know new life is possible. We know that life returns to places that are seemingly dead. That's the Easter message. At one level, we see it in the flowers that are just starting to break out of the cold ground and the buds that look dead on the branches but soon will burst forth with flowers. If only it happened that easily in the human soul. This return of life is not so automatic for us human beings like it is in the world of nature. It takes courage and fortitude for us to claim an Easter experience. And when we're at our lowest places, when we are grieving or have lost the way and think nothing good can happen to us again, it's really hard to believe new life is possible. For those of you who have recently experienced the loss of a loved one, or another great disappointment, or a difficult diagnosis, or other bad news, you know why we stay in dead places. Because at times it's all we can do. We've not yet mustered the strength and courage to look for that new life. The message of Easter is, though, no event in your life has the power to imprison you. Thurman didn't say in his remarks that it was easy to get out of prison. In fact, he pointed out that we may hold on to those dead leaves through long winters. But he goes on to say, something will and can stir within us, and we will open to the possibility of new life coming from a dead place. Not sometimes, not for other people, but for everyone, for each of us. That Easter experience is possible. Look around. There are incredible Easter stories being written every day. Right now, my dad is in a rehab hospital, and there are many folks there who have had truly horrible strokes or terrible accidents. But some of them, as they struggle in physical therapy and occupational therapy and speech therapy, as they say with every shaky step on their walker or slurred speech, I will not be trapped by the circumstances of my life. I think of the mothers who I've met in Boston who have lost children to gun violence, and whose hearts are surely broken beyond our ability to even understand. Yet some of them come together and work to make their streets safer and even to get politicians to change laws to prevent these tragedies to others. They have all been in the tomb of despair. Yet they have heard that little, even faint tune of life always, always, always is singing. And all these people are claiming new life in dead places. I look out at your faces here, and I know some of you have struggled, and some are struggling now, struggling to step out of those dead places in your life to places of new hope. Those of you who have lost a loved one, yet have been able to move beyond grief to see that life can be good again. Those of you who have left those dead places of failure or rejection to find a new fullness in life. Those of you who let go of shame and found pride and self-worth. Those of you who let go of the death-like hold anger can have on us and found the new life that mended relationships and restored trust can have. those of you who have been battling physical and mental illness, and the horrible death-like hold that substance abuse and all kinds of addiction can have on us, but who hold on to hope each and every day, you are what the Easter message is all about. That Easter faith tells us that disappointment, grief, pain, and anger will yield and break open, allowing the possibility for new life to flow in. That is the resurrection. No matter how bad your situation is, no matter how long you've endured it, it awaits you. As the Reverend Max Kutz puts it in the quote at the top of your order of service, in us are written the new version of the old Easter story, the empty tomb, the renewal. We are part of what the ancient myth can mean, for we are or can be the resurrection and the life. Easter is not a celebration of a victory of life over death that happened once on a hillside outside of Jerusalem, but one that happens each and every day in the depth of the human spirit, right here, where in spite of all the pain and struggle, we again and again say yes to life. It's here, available to us now. It's all around us in the lives of ordinary and extraordinary people. What a gift and what a miracle that is. Worthy of those shouts of Alleluia, those songs we sing of victory and praise.
A tomb is no place to stay, be it a cave in the Judean hills or in the dark cavern of the spirit.
A tomb is no place to stay when fresh grass rolls away the stone of winter cold and valiant flowers burst their way to warmth and light.
A tomb is no place to stay when each morning announces our reprieve, and we know we are granted yet another day of living.
A tomb is no place to stay when life laughs a welcome to hearts that have been away too long. Happy Easter. I invite all of you who would like to join us for the Alleluia Chorus to come forward. Music is available at the entrance of each aisle. They'll hand it to you. And hold up your signs. Go to your section, which you sing basses, tenors, altos, sopranos.